that feminists are still working on.
They may have been just a bunch of students, but when the black school bands went on the road, their swinging music kept the school doors open, helped pull the country out of depression, and came to symbolize America. And what fun they had doing it. Swing Time was produced by Artemis Media Project. Executive producer, Kathy Farnell. Production assistant by Alabama Public Television and Adam Vincent. We had additional assistance from Chris Roos and Nomad Productions. This project is supported in part by an award from the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes that a great nation deserves great art, and by a grant from the Alabama State Council on the Arts. Support for this program comes from this station and public radio international stations nationwide, and is made possible in part by the PRI Program Fund, whose contributors include the Ford Foundation and the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation. Our thanks to the interviewees who gave us their time, particularly Dr. Kip Lornell, Dr. Sherry Tucker, Dr. Kenneth Jenkin, Clora Bryant, Isola Thetford Collins, Ernie Mae Crofton Miller, Roz Crone, Helen Cole, Evelyn McGee Stone. Thanks to Riverwalk Jazz for permission to excerpt material from their interview with Helen Jones Woods. Thanks also to Dan Morgenstern and the Institute of Jazz Studies, Rutgers University, for permission to excerpt material from archival interviews with Erskine Hawkins. And to Dr. Sherry Tucker for permission to excerpt material from her book, Swing Shift. This program is dedicated to the memory of Dr. Jean Schaefer. Find more about black college swing bands at www.swingtimepublicradio.org. I'm Tania Stewart.
This is T-R-I Treasure Chest, a big fan, and I want to thank you and hope you enjoyed this history.
Hi, and this is Robbie Schaefer. You're tuned to Journal. WHFR Dearborn, where they play great music all the time.
Do you like the sound of my voice? Well, I don't. Not if you're not listening. The new WHFR Journal is now broadcast every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m. or is available as a podcast from our website, www.whfr.fm. But if you're not listening, you won't know what's happening and what I and other special co-hosts and guests think about it. And I won't like that. This is WHFR Dearborn. Coming up now, news and information, local news and information on the new WHFR Journal. This is the new WHFR Journal for Friday, February the 8th, 2008. My name is Jay Koronek. I'm the host of this show, as well as being WHFR station advisor. You know, WHFR is the only local, independent, non-commercial radio station for Dearborn and the surrounding area. And so on this show, we try to give you news and issues that matter to you most, because they're right next door. Now, today we have a couple of telephone interviews scheduled from people not in the area, but about topics that, well, at least I think, are extremely significant. And we're going to get to those in just a few minutes. Our first guest will be, and we hope to call in, will be calling in about 3 or 4 minutes from now. But first, sort of a scoop, I guess, because they had no time to get into the local weekly papers. Former Dearborn Mayor John B. O'Reilly Sr. passed away at 89. He was mayor from 1978 to 85, and he was also remembered as police chief for 11 years before that. He died this last Wednesday, February 6, at his Lakeport, Michigan home. He was 89 years old. Of course, he had a distinguished career, and we don't have time on this show. I'm sure the newspapers will give you the full bio and background that will honor him. But public visitation will be on Sunday, February 10th, from noon to 7 p.m. at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center. That's Michigan Avenue in Greenfield. A funeral mass will be at St. Alphonsus Church on Dearborn, in Dearborn, on Monday, February 11th, at 11 a.m. In addition, if you can't make it to this Sunday's public visitation, and if you want to honor him as a fine Dearborn mayor for 7 years, 8 years, you can also send donations, they suggest, to the Dearborn Lions Club, to the Dearborn Good Fellows, and or to Access, all in Dearborn. Okay? So that there will be more information there, but I don't know how you'd hear about it other than word of mouth or someone that knew the O'Reillys. So we do express our condolences to our current Mayor John B. Jack O'Reilly Jr.'s and his family at the death of former Dearborn Mayor John B. O'Reilly Sr. and his father. And so that public visitation, again, will be on Sunday, February 10th, from noon to 7 p.m. at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center. And the funeral mass will be at St. Alphonsus Church in Dearborn on Monday, February 11th at 11 a.m. And finally, again, in lieu of flowers, donations are requested to either Dearborn Lions Club, Dearborn Goodfellows, or Access. For more information, you could contact the Public Information Office in the city of Dearborn, too, which is 943-2285. So coming up next, we're expecting a call from a presidential candidate. Okay? A candidate for a presidential nomination, anyway, from a political party. And let me explain. Okay? First of all, there are more than two political parties in the United States of America. You may be aware of that whenever you go to vote. Those of you who do vote, hopefully all of you listening to the show are voters and try to get other people to vote too and do their civic duty and make the best choices possible to keep our democracy alive and vital. And, you know, with all these primaries and all of these TV debates, you might think, well, that's the only people running for president. And unfortunately, that is not the case. You know, it's very unfortunate for our democracy that television and the state governments, almost every state that has primaries, does not allow anyone but candidates from the Democratic and Republican parties to participate. So they allow the state to help choose not definitively choose in any case, in every case anyway, who it is that's going to be the state's nominee within the large political party's convention. Okay, and those happen, well, it depends. For example, Democrat and Republican national conventions to finally choose their candidates will be happening later this summer. I suspect it'll be July, maybe early August. I don't know the exact dates for the Democrat and Republican national conventions, but it's usually July and August. And I do know that the Libertarian Party's convention comes up this May, only a couple months away, where they are going to choose their candidate. The Green Party nominee is going to be chosen in July in Chicago, by the way, fairly close by. The Libertarian Party is a little bit longer. So that's the background, and we have a phone call coming in now. Hello, it's WHFR Radio. Jay speaking. Hey, Mr. Imperato, thank you so much for calling in. I'll put you on the air live with us, and please, even though I am a full-time professor here, just call me Jay, no problem, okay? All right, I'll put you on. Oh, well, yeah, sure, and I'm sorry we don't have much chance to. Yes, I noticed that. I was very excited, and we'll bring that up as part of our interview. I'll be able to talk to you in just a few seconds on the air live, and we'll go to about 1:30. I'll give you time on that. I have another guest coming on at that time, but thank you. So just hang on the line. Okay, you heard that call is coming in. Let me patch him through. Okay, Daniel Imperato, are you there? Hello, can you hear me?
DC.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
There you go. Okay. Well, we're on the air live with Daniel Imperato. Now, to our listeners, Mr. Imperato, they may not be familiar with your name. I was just explaining that the system we have this time around for presidential upcoming election this year, there's a lot of TV debates within the Democratic Republican Party, and there's, of course, the state primaries. But, anyone who is either an independent or part of any other political party, such as the Libertarian Party, you're not part of that, are you? Maybe you could briefly explain, without being too disparaging to the Democrats and Republicans, why the Libertarian Party, and for that matter, other political parties, haven't been invited.
Well, first of all, the third party run for the White House is, of course, a threat. The old GOP and the traditional Democratic and Republican control in the White House. The fact is if you look at our currency and what I say is she, and I'm not talking about your girlfriend or your wife, I'm talking about Social Security, health care, mm-hmm. and education, we're in trouble. And we've been blocked out of the media for a long time, unless you have certain specific financial capabilities like even Ross Perot did. They even blocked him out, and it was only toward the end of the race that he was even able to buy media time because they just traditionally block out any third party. And it's a rough road to run, but I think that the country is ready for a third party, and I don't think that anything's going to change in this country. Business as usual. I mean, McCain and Clinton, that's just business as usual, and you're not going to see anything change in this country. Except for the change they take from one pocket and put in the other. So hopefully the independent voters in this country will wrap their arms around me, and maybe in May I will possibly win the Libertarian nomination, mm-hmm. which will give me ballot access in 50 states. But I'm also have a party called the People's Independent Party, and I plan on running on this platform from now until the day's end. So I hope and pray that I'm part of a movement and a change in this country that will put a divide between the traditional old Democratic and Republican regime.
Well, I think that's great. First of all, as you're probably as sympathetic to the fact that the Constitution of the United States of America doesn't talk about political parties or the necessity for that. Anyone should have who's, I think, in terms of presidency, you have to be a native-born citizen and at least 35 years of age. But other than that, you should be able to get your name on the ballot or at least have people write in your name in any state. I know I was taught mistakenly in civics class in high school that the American system is a two-party system, and it's un-American to have a third or fourth party, and I don't know where that came from. There's many other countries in the world, Canada right north of us here, that that do pretty well with having more than two parties and seem to express a lot of points of view, and they are vital democracies. So I think it's wonderful that, first of all, you have decided to put in the time and effort to be a candidate for nomination for president in the Libertarian Party, and that, you know, if that doesn't work out, or if you want to push your opinions and your ideas even further or beyond that, or instead of that, that you'd want to set up your own organization. So I commend you, and it's the essence of our wonderful democracy that makes this possible.
But spending the time that I have spent traveling around the world for the last 30 years, having high honors from our late Pope John Paul, which is where I studied my philosophy, my languages, and my understanding of the world, being a very well-traveled man, and follow the philosophy of Pope John Paul pertaining to mutual beneficial respect, has given me an edge on any candidate in this race. I've spent 30 years traveling this world, learning about the people in the world, and learning about what the outside looks at America and what they look at. And America for a long time has been looked at as the McDonald's and the drug country. And it's sad because when you look at the country from outside, nobody is respecting our democracy anymore, because the Democrats and the Republicans fight with each other on TV. The political leadership in this country has been basically forced their way in to other countries to force democracy down their throats instead of using diplomacy. And the people around the world, while they love America and its land, they don't like the administration and what's going on, and our dollar is suffering from it. Mm-hmm. Our business relations around the world are suffering from it. And unfortunately, you know, as much as I respect John McCain, I met him the other day, he's got a lot to learn about foreign policy, and he's never balanced a checkbook. So mm-hmm. I've been running businesses in several languages and several tax structures in several countries around the world. And I'm a very experienced man. And you're right. All I want to do is give back to the people. And, you know, I see things that others don't. And I can tell you that the McCain strategy is winning on the Republican side, because he knew straightforward that the Saudi Arabians and the, you know, bin Laden family from Saudi Arabia, the tribe, would reach out for Osama and tell Osama to put their weapons down in Iraq, so that George Bush will look like a hero, because the Bush administration and the bin Laden family and the Saudis go back for a long, long time. And the fact is that the Saudis are ready to go in now, calm down, and then take control of the oil so they can refine it and distribute it and fill up their oil wells. And at the same time, Osama bin Laden did Saudi Arabia a favor. It increased the oil price by four times what it was, which increased their balance sheets. And the Saudis have become the richest kingdom in the world and basically bought up the world with oil riches. And it was a very shrewd move, and it actually goes back to the biblical times of Jacob and Esau. And bin Laden, representing Esau, wanted his birthright back, and that's why bin Laden bombed the Twin Towers, where George Washington founded our nation, and his oath of office was taken on the corner of Wall and Broad Street. But the problem we have specifically in this country is the country's in a divide, and one nation without God is one nation going under, and I think Jefferson said that. And the fact is even Ronald Reagan went out and reached out for Christianity and spoke to the Lord, asked him about peace in Iran at the time. And our presidential leaders have dwindled down the responsibility of not only protecting the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the documents of our republic, and they've also forgotten that those documents were written in accordance with Judeo-Christian principles. And that's what I hope and pray that I'm able to persuade the Libertarian Party. Our differences are clear. I am a man who, when I give my word as a papal knight from the Vatican, as the Grand Prior of the Sovereign Order of Bonaria, which means I am in a presidential position on my own right, running the United States and Canada for one of the oldest humanitarian organizations in the world, called the Sovereign Order of Bonaria, a Catholic Orthodox order from the north of Syria, founded in 1036 with grand colliers such as Jimmy Carter and Nelson Mandela. We have representation in 140 countries around the world. I'm a man of the world, and I have street smarts. I left home young, so I have street smarts so the American people won't get their pockets picked. I have global smarts, so I'll make sure the rest of the world doesn't pick our pockets. I have a mutual beneficial respect in philosophy pertaining to my training with our late Pope John Paul. And I love George Washington, and I want to defend the documents of our republic and the documents of our democracy, but I want to defend them in accordance with Judeo-Christian principles.
Okay.
And as I told the Libertarian Party, they want to defend the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and they need to realize that these documents were written in accordance with Judeo-Christian principles. And if they embrace
one nation
that,
under God, right?
One nation under God,
right.
Baby. And,
okay.
You know, I didn't write that.
Yeah.
That's, actually, today I was on a show at the Christian, the conservative convention here in Washington, and I said to the gentleman, he was talking about calls them illegal aliens, and I said, look, they're not aliens, they're human beings. I said, but, you know, you should remember that when Christopher Columbus came to the Americas, they discovered the Americas, and the first man off the boat was a Jewish man, and our country was called New Israel. And our country, we were born in Jesus Christ. Our birthright is Christianity. Mm-hmm. And the problem is that as the immigrants from around the world have come to our country, we have not asked them to stand by and defend the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the documents of democracy, and we haven't even demanded them to give up their passports of their nation, as other countries do. We've basically let everybody come here and do whatever they want.
Mm-hmm.
And now our country and our nation split. And God is mad.
Well, how do you feel?
I hope he doesn't punish us and give us Hillary.
Yeah. Well, because of your close connection with the Catholic Church and several of the organizations you work with are for example, I noticed in your bio, and again, I want to recap for my listeners, we're speaking with Daniel Imperato, who is a candidate for the nomination for president from the Libertarian Party, and we'll know about that after their convention in May. And this is one of the several people who are very significant in running to try to be president from parties other than Democrat and Republican. But especially in your background, noticed it says you were also ordained as a chaplain for the Latin African American Chaplains Association. That's so I guess it's fair to ask you the question of how do you, which was asked to Mitt Romney and even Mike Huckabee, how do you stand on the issue of religion, religious freedom, and religious tolerance, too?
Well, actually,
briefly.
I am open to religious freedom. I am very familiar with the Quran, and I love the Muslim community. I have an office in Abu Dhabi and an office in Cairo, and I have children. I'm a godfather to an Egyptian boy. I'm Uncle Danny to seven Muslim kids in Abu Dhabi, and I'm uncle to the Chinese family and the Portuguese family in Brazil, and I'm Uncle Danny to the Italians and the Englanders. The fact is that religion should play no part whatsoever in government, except for the fact that if you run for president of a country and the country's constitution was written and based upon principles of Christianity or Judaism, in our case, Judeo-Christian principle,
mm-hmm. Yep.
Then I think the president, when he swears in and he puts his hand and swears in the oath of office and puts his hand on the Bible, in this case, that he must defend the country and protect the principles of which the country was founded on. And if I ran for president in the Middle East or I ran for president in China or whatever culture that I would go to and what country I would go to, as the president of the country, you have to defend what the country stood for when it was founded.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we have now possibility here in this race with a guy like Obama. I mean, this man, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. His family's from Kenya. He was born in Hawaii. He became an American citizen by chance, born on a military base, similar to Jimmy Carter. And what did Jimmy Carter do? He gave the Panama Canal away to the Panamanians. And I believe what's Obama going to do? He's going to give us away to the third world. And I think this country's in real, real serious trouble. We're going the wrong direction.
Yeah.
I mean,
let me touch on one other issue from your one other special part of your bio and your background here that I think is quite remarkable. Then I'll ask you some sort of brief quickie questions like some of the issues of the day like healthcare, immigration, and so on in our last, we've got about 9 minutes left here. But I was actually amazed because they always bring up the idea of, well, you need to either have experience for being elected politician or experience, as I said in the last election, in business, as Mr. Romney has some business experience with, I think, just one investment firm. Your experience in business, and folks listening to this right now, they should know that I'm not endorsing Mr. Imperato. I don't endorse any candidate for office on this show. It's just another valid choice that, in this case, is not allowed to make his case to the public, although the certainly the Libertarian Party will hear your full background and status. But I was amazed at your extensive experience worldwide. And as you mentioned just briefly at the beginning, too, that you're in the process of organizing a global subsea, underneath the ocean, fiber optic telecommunications cable network. And maybe tied into that, you even had an idea for an education portal for programs and classes. And I don't know if that's tied into the international plan, but and you've mentioned your connection with, of course, the Middle East businesses, and also the I wanted to bring up the African Center Foundation and the fight against HIV and AIDS in Africa. You really have been closely involved with business, especially, and I'm sure governments, worldwide. Really a remarkable bio, even though you haven't been an elected politician.
Well, actually, I feel like I've won already as the Grand Prior of the Sovereign Order of Bonaire, a Papal Knight from the Vatican. I'm also a Knight of Malta and a Latin African Christian Association chaplain. But more important is that when I was a little boy, I nailed at the altar as an altar boy, and I asked the Lord to give me an education, let me see the world, and make $1 million. So watch out for what you ask for. Now, actually, he's asked me to run for president and give back my wisdom. Uh-huh. I'll also tell you that I study Messianic Judaism, and I study the Torah. I'm very familiar with the Hebrew and actually the Quran versions of the translation between the Paleo-Hebrew and the Aramaic language. And I am a very well-educated, very well-rounded man who's been in business all over this world. My last telecommunications project was a $5 billion fiber optic cable system connecting 70 countries around the world. We put that on hold because of the last telecommunications crash. I've been involved in satellite communications broadcast. I've been involved in passport identification cards. I've been involved in iris scan, fingerprint, thumbprint. I've been involved in oil and gas drilling, exploration, deep sea, offshore, relinquish wells onshore. I've just been involved with so many different businesses and so many different countries and companies that the good Lord gave me what I asked for. I asked to get a great education, and bringing that to the educational portal, my salvation and solution for education, part of my SHE program, is very simple. There's enough educational content in this country and around the world that as a 501c3 education company, we'd be able to build an electronic portal, which I'm doing as a business anyway, called the U.S. Education System. It's an e-portal where universities would donate one course from each university to come up with a course, a menu of courses that would be accredited so that every human being would have an opportunity to get an e-education learning over the Internet through a prepaid education card or through a public broadcast system TV station with a two-way communication capability backed up by a satellite communications to be able to have home learning and distance learning, very simple and very inexpensive. And in the case of being a 501c3, we could take contributions from the universities pertaining to courses, contributions for the public as pertaining to education and teaching, and we could feed the children in this society, such as myself, that didn't have the money to go to college. I was a semi-pro hockey player up in New England, and I had to make a decision to go play with the Oshawa Generals, the team that Bobby Orr played for, or go to work. And I was poor, and I had to choose to go to work because I couldn't afford to get an education and play hockey, and it was difficult. So my heart goes out to the children. I also developed a TV show called America's Next President, It's all about an independent running for president on campus. And
I'd like
Shatner,
to see that.
So
yes.
maybe he'll play my part.
Well,
I love the children.
That'd be great.
I love the university.
Mm-hmm. Let me, because we only have a couple minutes left, and I hate to do sound bites, but we have. That's why I don't just give
I'm
you
not
30 seconds.
To bite anybody.
Oh, very good line.
I've never been to any school class or anything to learn how to bite people. That's not my cup of tea.
You have expressed your feelings and knowledge about several issues here, and we don't have time for all of them. But what about health care? Our health care system is a big problem.
Quickly.
Okay.
Look, the U.S. First of all, my platform is health and wealth. This country is not healthy, both in our pocketbooks, both in our home life, and both in our outside life. The problem is we're feeding our children poison. The FDA hasn't been telling you, but the children's brains in this country have shrunk. The lifespan of a child from 40 to 50 years, we are in trouble in this country because of the poison we're feeding our children. And the poison we're feeding the children is creating the drugs being utilized like Ritalin and the problem of ADD. We need to get healthy. We need to get healthy at home. And then outside, we have to stop eating McDonald's and fast foods and food that's no good for you because it also affects the health. And in addition, in order to get healthy in your pocket, the only way to do it is to have the pharmaceutical companies and the medical manufacturing companies. I say it takes $1 billion to approve a pharmaceutical product. It's going to now take $100 million will be donated to the nonprofit 501c3 U.S. healthcare system. And then I say that the American people have been used as guinea pigs. We get all the drugs and all the products tested on us. Then these companies go out and they sell them all over the world. And it's funny. American people can't afford to buy the products and the drugs anymore, but yet foreign governments who have nationalized health care allow their people, like for myself, I buy eye drops. I'm blind in my left eye. Here it costs me $40 a bottle. In Canada, it costs me $2 a bottle. So you know what I say? I say there's a 3% commission on every drug, every...
Hello?
Hi, this is Jay Gornick speaking.
Hi, Jay. My name is Jackie, and I'm calling to connect you to your interview with Tracy Cox.
Okay. I just had a telephone malfunction here, and so you may have to call back. I've just unfortunately disconnected our previous guest, and we are on live right now. So, I hope he calls back. I hope he realizes it went dead. So we're going to have to. I'm just handling this phone system in the studio here. So I do apologize, but is she available to go on right now?
Yes, she is.
Okay, well, I'm waiting for this other gentleman to call back so we can give a summary. And so I may have to put you on hold if that happens. So how did you want to proceed?
Okay.
Did you want to call back in 2 minutes?
You want me to call back in 2 minutes?
That would be great.
Okay, well, I can do that.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay,
so I want to apologize to our listeners, first of all, on the phone system here. What happened was a second call came in, and Mr. Imperato was cut off. Now, I'm hoping that he will call back through our phone line, and we can put him on for a summary. He has a lot of exciting ideas here, some are Libertarian Party principled ideas, and others are specific ideas that, you know, you talk about change. I think you'll really get them from people that are not inside the status quo, and all ideas should be considered fairly and equally. So if Mr. Imperato is listening or is able to call back, you know, phone disconnects happen, and he was calling on a cell, in fact, I know, because we had some interference there. So I do apologize to him and to my listeners, and I hope it was nothing that he said that had me disconnect him there. The other call somehow got crossed. And so I do want to say again that he is Daniel Imperato for president 2008 on the Libertarian Party candidate ticket if they choose him as their candidate this May. I think it's worthy of all of our Dearborn listeners and in the surrounding area to consider every political party and every candidate, even an independent, who might be on the ballot. And I think we need some good ideas. We need some new ideas that we're willing to try. Certainly Mr. Imperato expressed many of those. So this is the new WHFR Journal, and my name is Jay Koronick, and I'm sticking to that no matter what happens here. So we're waiting now for just to see if Mr. Imperato is going to call back, and then we'll put on the next caller. So let's see. We need a public service announcement here for emergency preparedness, like on the phone lines. Here we go, and we'll be right back with more of the new WHFR Journal.
We've been married a year.
Yep, and in business together for 2 months.
Oh, it's a big move for us, starting a business and everything.
And for our future 9 children.
Oh, our future 2 children.
Look, there are lots of worries in starting a business, but creating an emergency preparedness plan shouldn't be one of them.
Yeah, we needed a plan in case of fire, flood, or cyber attack. I mean, how would we get the business back up and running?
Mm-hmm, because without the business, we could never afford baseball mitts for the 9 kids.
We went to Ready.gov and downloaded everything we needed to create a plan. I mean, Ready.gov has free templates, checklists, and more.
Yeah, without Ready.gov, I could easily get old before my time.
Mm-hmm.
The furrowed brow, nervous twitch.
But because of Ready.gov, we have one less thing to worry about.
Groupie showed
it. Oh, stop it.
Go to Ready.gov for details on creating an emergency preparedness plan. Ready.gov. Becoming a success is hard work. Protecting it isn't. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, the Ad Council, and this station.
We're back live with the new WHFR Journal. Jay Koronick with you, and we're waiting for one or the other of our guests to call back in and reconnect with us. As I mentioned earlier today, I just got news that this last Wednesday, former Dearborn mayor, not the present mayor, who's his son, but the former mayor of Dearborn, John B. O'Reilly Sr., has passed away, and the public visitation will be at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center, Michigan Avenue in Greenfield, at this Sunday. Okay? Let's see. The times are from noon to 7 p.m. Okay. Our second phone call is coming in. Hi, this is WHFR Radio. Jay speaking. Hey, Jackie. We're ready to go live now. Thank you. Hi, Tracy. Just fine. Thank you so much. Listen, I'll put you on the air in just 5 seconds. I'll be right back to you. Thanks. Okay, here we go. Now, this is a special topic, folks, so we are connected now, I trust, with Tracy Cox, that's C-O-X, who is known as a sex doctor, although not an official doctor. But how are you doing, Tracy? Are you having a busy day giving people Valentine's Day tips?
I certainly am, yes.
Okay.
So you're one of my last interviews, and then I jump on a plane back to London.
Okay. You'll catch the accent, folks, which is very sexy in and of itself, at least to Americans.
Yes, exactly. I think I'm going to move here because everyone's commented on my accent.
Yeah, all it takes is the right voice, huh? Okay.
Voice has got a lot to do with it, actually.
Well, it does. Yes, absolutely. Let me indicate to our listeners why you're on this show today. First of all, we're an educational, non-commercial, independent radio station on the west side of Detroit, Michigan, and we cover an area in which about 200,000 people live and work. Not all of them are tuned in right now, I'm sorry to say. Mm. But nonetheless, in our city of license, Dearborn, Michigan, which you may know internationally as the home of Ford Motor Company and the birthplace of Henry Ford and all that, we're mostly a senior community over the age of 50. And
okay.
And so, you know, it's great that you're available. And let me indicate for your sake, too, that your last book title is a popularization, I guess, or a reworking of the Hindu book, a classic Kama Sutra,
mm-hmm.
and also before that, books on, sex tips, hot sex tips. So that should excite my listeners. I did
and
get a chance.
Body language and relationships and stuff like that.
Yes, of course. And as a former associate editor of Australian's Cosmo magazine, Cosmopolitan, certainly you've been involved in popularizing and explaining on radio and TV, too. I'm sorry to say I haven't seen some of the TV series. Some of them are BBC Two and other things that may not have quite got to the U.S. Mm. I think the Discovery Channel might have.
Yeah, they did an HBO run, one of them as well.
Right, right. So let me, as long as we have you on the line here, let me see. Can you give us some tips? Again, the idea that you made yourself available here is to talk about various skills to snag a date on this Valentine's Day, especially body language issues. Mm. What about seniors? What about people who are over the age of 50? Now, a lot of them have never been married, but also widowed and divorced.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, these are big. I don't actually. I'm 46 myself, so I don't think of 50 and over as seniors, which is quite an interesting way to describe people like that. But I think what's interesting about, you know, if you are either starting out very late and perhaps you've been absorbed in your career, or you just haven't been that interested in finding a partner, or you had a partner and you've either split up or been widowed or your partner's died, then you are back out in that market, and it can be quite, it's probably more nerve-wracking than what it was first time round, because everybody thinks, I don't know what the rules are anymore, and I think mm-hmm. that's the first thing that you need to think about, is there are no rules really, and if there are, they probably haven't changed that much since the last time you were out there. So I do think that's important, that instead of thinking, I know nothing about how it's all done these days, it's really done the old way.
Okay, so the basics are the important thing.
Well, they are the basics.
But you have to get beyond, maybe there's some health issues that you would have in later life over the age of 50.
Yes, you probably won't be doing the carmesine
right.
position.
Right, and also I think always the problem, and I'm 62, but I think the problem is the baggage, the trauma, the little problems before makes you a little scared to maybe go out or be as bold as you might have been a few years before. But you just have to sort of put that aside somehow, right?
Well, you do, and also, take baby steps. I mean, we've all had a past. And of course, everything that happens in our past shapes us. But think our past is what's happening now as well. Do you know what I mean? Like the life you're building today is going to affect how you feel tomorrow, and the future and the past are all intermingled. So to some point, yes, you have to accept that somebody's past is going to influence their life. But another point is, I think we all make a decision, don't we? Even if our life's been absolutely dreadful up until that point, we've had really bad experiences with relationships. You can actually say, okay, that's fair enough. But, just because, the two guys in my life that were really horrible to me, it doesn't mean every guy is going to be bad. We're very good at making these sort of like very cynical judgments about, relationships based on our limited experience. And not all men are bad. Not all women are bad. Not everybody cheats. It's just you have to really train yourself to think, okay, I'm going to learn from it and maybe keep my eyes open. And now I know to look for the signs, but I'm going to give people the benefit of the doubt, and that is harder to do as you get older, but it can be done if you really put your mind to it.
So you have to treat each new person that you meet as in the most positive way, sort of like innocent until proven guilty or something.
Well, exactly.
Not innocent necessarily
think, like,
in a sexual sense.
When you've got two people meeting over the age of 50, obviously you're going to talk about your past and past relationships, but don't dwell on it. Like, if you meet somebody new and you don't particularly like your past, and you don't, particularly want to be thought of as somebody who's been left lots of times, for instance, don't tell them. Let that come out a bit later so they can see you as you are now, because we do judge people based on what they tell us. So, reinvent yourself a little bit, and I don't mean lie, I just mean don't tell them everything.
Yeah, I wonder about the value, especially if you're a few years older, a few decades of experience. So what's the value of full disclosure? I mean, shouldn't every relationship be based on what it is? I mean, there are some things that should be maybe conveyed, about your past. It might impact on the present, but, complete disclosure might take a while if you're, 40 or 50 years of life behind you.
Exactly. And is it really necessary? I don't know. It's like when people say, should you be eaten utterly, completely, should there be 100% honesty in a relationship? And my answer to that is no. I mean, there are some things that I think, we've all got secrets. And so long as it's not harming the relationship, I'm certainly not condoning affairs or anything like that, or holding back something which would affect your relationship. Mm-hmm. But I mean, do you really want to know? Like, do I want to know that my partner, is currently probably, out at a bar in London and probably, having quite a nice chat with somebody who, if I wasn't around, would probably be a contender? No, I don't want to know that. I don't want him to tell me that because it would worry me.
Certainly.
You know, if I don't,
yeah.
And it's innocent, isn't it? So, you know, it's like certain things like, you know, what do you think of my best friend? Isn't she gorgeous? You know, that's a loaded question. You know, you answer that completely differently. You know, who's the person you love most in your life? Well, if you're anywhere 2 months on, the answer is, well, probably you. You know, like, there are certain things that we say, little white lies that we... that are sort of necessary,
sure.
And it's unnecessary to tell the truth in those circumstances.
And in terms of getting help now, of course, you've written 3, 4, or 5 books maybe now, and the Kama Sutra took my breath away, your version of it.
Yeah.
The pictures, folks, in there have to tell people, only so much we can talk about over American radio in terms of words, but it's people without clothes on who are in various sexual positions, but it's not a how-to book. That's kind of interesting, is that, and it's not, you don't need gymnastic skills necessarily, although some of the stuff is a little puzzling. I'd like to see more angles on, but seriously, it's a very long as people are not offended by seeing a picture of someone whose body doesn't have clothes on it. It's actually intended to be helpful and sensitive and positive, not. And, you know, nothing wrong with it as far as I see that is for private use by individuals. And but you're also recommending in all of your books that people, if they have, you know, detailed questions, that they actually see maybe a psychiatrist, psychologist, maybe a medical doctor, a sex therapist, too, that there's nothing wrong with getting help like this, right?
Oh, I mean, that's my psychology background. Obviously, it would be odd if I wasn't encouraging people. But, I mean, I do think Americans actually have a healthier attitude than the Brits do, in the sense that if you have a problem, people will take themselves off to therapy. It's not seen as something that, you know, that you're a failure or you're nuts. Or,
right.
You know, still in Britain, there's a bit of that sort of like, oh, you know, she's seeing a therapist, like almost said with a, you know, you never know. She's obviously, like, not coping. And I do think, you know, if you have a heart problem, you go and see a heart specialist. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're having problems with sex or if you're having problems with relationships, there is an expert out there to go and see. And often, you know, you can solve the problem yourself, you know, but it might take you, you know, like ages. It might take you like, you know, a year or, you know, 10 weeks to solve what they could probably fix in about an hour.
What do you think, if I may just interrupt, we only have a couple of minutes, and I know it sounds like you've been drinking coffee all day or something. But
I've got a gravelly voice.
You know, no, you're just talking very fast. And
I think I talk fast anyway.
No, it's great. It's wonderful. But what about dating services online? I mean, if people are somewhat reticent about meeting people in public, what do you think overall? I haven't read anything in your books about pros and cons. I mean, obviously, initially you don't know anything about these people, but their text messages or maybe one picture. But anything good or bad about that?
I think I'm a huge fan of internet dating.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been quite interesting because I've been in this area for so long, watching when it first came out and everybody's reaction and how people use it now. Like, I think when it first came out, people were like, oh, my God, you know, you'd have to be really desperate to go on that. Mm. Whereas now, it's most useful, actually, is for, you know, people who are really busy career people, like a lot of my friends in London who are, you know, like really good-looking, successful women in their, you know, like early 30s,
mm-hmm.
you know, late 30s, always date online now because it's so time-efficient for them.
Ah, well, yeah.
And especially for, you know, like people plus 50, you know, seniors, I think it's the perfect way to go because it's not like there are certain places where you can go and hang out. When you're young, there are. There's clubs and bars and all sorts of places
set
up for young. But it's not so much. So this is a way of people reaching out and finding each other. And it's quite a nice way to connect because, yes, sure, there's a picture and, you know, so you do react to that. But most people on internet dating end up connecting with words, with, you know, like they end up sending emails, they might have a phone chat.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time they actually meet each other, they've got much less invested in what the other person looks like or whether they have a chemistry reaction to them.
Mm-hmm.
It's more like a day-to-day compatibility, which is, of course, what's going to make a better relationship long-term.
Yeah. Some of these services, my last question, and then we'll summarize about your work and how people can find out more about what you have to share with us, too. But some of these dating services, and I agree, it is a whole new opportunity, especially for seniors, those over 50 whatever. Although I have to say, with one of the services, I didn't get hardly any responses a couple of years ago. But that's, you know, maybe people weren't tuned in. But
a couple of years,
yeah.
too.
But what about the matching? What about, do you think opposites attract? Or, you know, because one of these services in the U.S., and I won't mention the name, but they match you on supposedly 19 or 20 different criteria, assuming that if you're very much alike in all kinds of different ways, you know, in your preference for food or entertainment or whatever, then that would be an ideal long-term relationship. Is there something to that? Or,
There is. I mean, there used to be a theory that opposites attracted, and opposites do attract. That is that is very true, but they tend not to stay together. Because at the end of the day, you've got to like doing the same things, or else you're doing everything apart, aren't you? You know, if you're that different in mentality, it's usually quite a feisty relationship. And some people like that, but other people are like, oh, this is too hard. So in terms of, you know, matching people up with, you know, preferences of food, I mean, it's actually a very good theory, and it's what your mum told you. You know, like your mum was like, you know, you know the whole meet the boy next door, you know, you would probably work out with the boy next door because you're very similar in your upbringings, and that's what shapes us. But there's one thing wrong with that theory, and that's chemistry. And that's that undefinable, you know, characteristic that makes us like somebody or makes us not like somebody. And you can like the same food, like everything the same, and if you just don't have it, you know, which is a certain chemistry between two people, not necessarily sexual, just like, you know, a
it's some sort of charisma, shared charisma or something,
So, so you can, but I mean, certainly, you know, I mean, chemistry is the hardest thing to capture, and it's quite, it's not, you know, it's not that rare because obviously people get together all the time. But I mean, you know, if you meet somebody through that dating site where it's matched up on the likes and you have chemistry, then you've got a pretty good chance of lasting because, you know, you've got so much in common, and that is important.
So for a senior type person, and by the way, I mentioned the over 50 because not only is that a demographic, but the American Association of Retired Persons, the AARP, they let members in at age 50. It's true that senior status in the U.S., as you probably know, is at least 62 or 65, but
please, I've only got 4 years before.
No. But you could join the AARP even, I guess, out of from London if you wanted to. But because they'll take anybody for the dues. So basically, you think don't be afraid, put yourself out there, flirt, be positive, right?
Be positive, and also, I mean, remember that it is a numbers game. You'd be amazed the amount of people I meet, young and old, and, you know, they're like, I can never meet anyone, and what am I going to do? I haven't met anyone. And it's like, and then you say, well, what do you do during your week? And they don't go anywhere. It's like, well, do you expect them to walk through the front door while you're sitting on the couch watching telly? I mean, you actually got to get yourself out there and at least make some effort to meet new people. So my thing would be, you know, even if you don't, if you don't want to go to dating things, just every time somebody asks you to something where you're going to meet new people, go. Even if you find that, you know, like, oh, I can't think of anything worse than going to a chess game or a, you know, dinner party, or just go, because you never know who you might meet.
Well, exactly. Well, happy Valentine's Day to you next week. Is it a big day in London too?
Yes, I think it's a big day everywhere, isn't
it? It's pretty much international holiday, I guess, huh? Well, thanks so much, and good luck with your continued work. You have any new maybe a television show or radio show or something coming up that Americans might see?
Soon? Not in America,
not yet.
Actually. It's over in the UK, but sometimes they'll buy them after we make them in the UK, so maybe you might get to see them later.
Okay, so Kama Sutra for Seniors is going to be your book in 10 years, right?
Actually, I am going to do a book about sex for older people because I think it's a fascinating topic.
Well, I think so, too. And but thank you for your time today. And have a great week, and happy Valentine's Day, as I said before.
Yeah, same to you.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yes, believe it or not, that was an internationally known sex doctor and relationship specialist, Tracy Cox. Now, she's not a real doctor, folks, doesn't hold a medical degree, but she has written popular books and has done television shows and radio shows with the help of medical doctors, and just wanted to end on a positive note as much as possible, even though we began with the sad fact that former Dearborn Mayor John B. O'Reilly Sr. passed away 2 days ago, and that public visitation will be this Sunday, February 10th, from noon to 7 at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center. Happy Valentine's Day to all of you next week, Thursday. Make love, not war, and all that. It's a great idea every day. Keep those relationships as positive, as compassionate, as you possibly can. And we're going to finish today in just a few moments with our Night Sky Report from Carrie Zaitz, who is pre-recorded here. And she was able to get in this week thanks to a snow attack here. Henry Ford Community College was closed Wednesday evening because of that sort of sudden blizzard ice storm, sleet storm that came down, and she was able to make it in. I love our WHFR volunteers in a Valentine's Day way for all their dedication to coming on the show and being part of our programming. Have not received that follow-up call from Daniel Imperato, and I do apologize again on the air for cutting him off. He knew he was about a minute away from his chance to summarize his opinions and points of view. But a Christian candidate, although with great religious understanding and religious tolerance, hopefully for the Libertarian Party nomination for president. And so you may see his name again on the ballot. If you are interested in the Libertarian Party, by the way, you can go to lp.org, pretty easy to understand, and there'll be a connection to the Michigan Libertarian Party website, a link there. So libertarianparty.org, and I'm looking here also at Imperato2008.com. That's Imperato, Imperato2008.com. That's his own website to support his candidacy for Libertarian nomination. Okay, and Tracy Cox here, and wouldn't you believe that Tracy has her own website, and it is Tracy Cox, that's T-R-A-C-E, not C-E-Y, C-O-X. Okay, Tracy Cox, T-R-A-C-E-Y-C-O-X.com. And her last book is entitled Kama Sutra, which is not really the Hindu sex guide. It is a sex manual with pictures, but it is I think more useful for people in the privacy of their own homes to learn and understand things. I certainly have to say I wish I had some available information like she presents in her books when I was starting out. I don't think there's anything wrong with knowing how to express physical love from one to another in the best possible ways. And there's all kinds of ways to do it, all kinds of people out there. What else is happening in Dearborn? Well, it's not that important, folks, right now. No, seriously, it is. And we hope you tune in again next week for another edition of the new WHFR Journal. Always here with interesting ideas and challenging thoughts. Here is Carrie Zaitz now and her Night Sky Report. Thank you for listening to this show. And remember, let's keep stirring things up. This is WHFR Dearborn.
Knowledge and research usually expand our view of things, but recent discoveries in cosmology have shrunk our known universe by expanding the unknown universe. In the late 80s and 90s, it seemed that we were closing in on some important numbers, like how old the universe is and how fast it is expanding. By figuring out how fast it's expanding, we could figure out how long ago it had started expanding, thus determining its age. By this method, we had narrowed the age of the universe down to somewhere between 10 to 20 billion years. Ballpark figure or not, it's still a staggeringly huge number. Now we know it's most likely 13.7 billion years. Very old, but it's a number. Finding the universal expansion rate required knowing how much stuff there was in the universe, which was thrown into doubt by the discovery of dark matter. We tossed the presumed amount of this mysterious, invisible, and as yet undetected dark matter into the equation and came up with the expansion rate of somewhere between 70 to 75 kilometers per second per megaparsec. That means that for every 3.2 million light-years of distance, galaxies are receding at 75 kilometers per second. Though the expansion rate is fast, the funny part of the story is that it's changing and it's not slowing down. cosmologists say that the universe is expanding faster than ever. But when questioned as to what is expanding, they say it's space, which contains about 4% stuff we see and 96% dark matter and dark energy. Dark matter is a mysterious, theoretical, and undetected substance that defies our understanding. And what is speeding up the expansion? Dark energy, a mysterious, theoretical, and undetected force that defies our understanding. Swell. So instead of expanding our knowledge base, research has introduced two new facets of the universe that are dark, undetected, and have an almost mythical, unknowable nature. The ultimate fate of the universe, once seemingly around the corner of our understanding, recedes into the distance. So where do these ideas come from, and what does it do to our understanding of the universe? The idea of dark energy was introduced to explain an observation that was otherwise unexplainable. By looking at a certain type of supernova, which is the spectacular explosions accompanying the death of a star, astronomers estimated how far away they are. By using those supernovae as standard candles, they found that, instead of slowing down as expected, the expansion of the universe was actually speeding up. It was quite a surprise, and immediately demanded explanations and theories. Thence came dark energy, a force manufactured to explain the quickening of the spreading out of the stuff that was not really known. Once again, our understanding recedes into the distance. Do we feel the thinness of the ice of knowledge yet? It seems that we are continually breaking through, falling into a dark chasm of the icy water of the unknown. But that's the exciting part about science, the cold, wet realization that you've got to come up with new ideas to explain the questions that arise from observations. Currently, cosmology is a field of science that demands careful, methodical study, but also demands creative, almost crazy thinking. It's not for the faint of heart, but the rewards are immeasurable. Until next week, my friends, enjoy the view.
That was Carrie Zaitz with her Night Sky Report here on WHFR Journal for this week. And we do actually have more episodes that will feature in the future. Just wanted to mention that Carrie is a part of the Henry Ford Community College adjunct faculty now, and she has a class in descriptive astronomy. That's right. They talk about it, I guess, a lot. And we're so happy to have her on campus actually teaching what she knows best. And formerly she was with the Crestwood High School did operate and give planetarium shows and to the public until the Crestwood School District decided, we don't need no adjunct educational experience that might have to do with science. I sorry to be cynical about that, but I have to mention again that was a bad decision. Even in a tight budget year, you don't cut back on the exciting aspects of education. And they had an extraordinary resource, which is now shuttered and closed. Very, very sad, isn't it? Very sad. So Carrie Zaitz is with us, at least, on the Night Sky Report, and also here in our science division, teaching descriptive astronomy, at least one class in the evenings on Monday and Wednesday nights. Now semester's already begun, but maybe you can check the fall schedule in a few months and see if there's something you could take with her at that time. So it's all we have time for now. Thank you for listening to the new WHFR Journal. Thank you, Daniel Imparato. And I did get in touch with him by cell phone, by the way. He's in Reagan International Airport, and he thinks people are monitoring his phone. And as I was talking to him, he was cut off again. So it's a cell phone thing, folks. I don't believe in that conspiratorial stuff, but he's fine. And that's Imparato, Imperato, 2008.com, or libertarianparty.com, which is LP, excuse me, not .com, LP.org, and tracycox.com, TRACECOX.com. Stay tuned for Highway 61 with Joanne Korchinska, coming right up.